on SOFpodcast.com, iTunes, and on Square One Football Radio. This is The Sound of Football.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin and Jan Bilton. This week, you know, sometimes we can be, you know, scratching around for content. We can all come around to my house and we can think, "Oh, what are we going to talk about this week? What are we going to shake the listeners to their core by revealing?" And sometimes there really isn't a lot around. And you know, sometimes, especially on these international breaks, we can be scratching around. But, you know, if you listen to Sound of Footballs in the past, where there's not been a lot going on, then those are the times when we sort of like kick back and sort of like take it a bit easier. But this week something landed in our lap, didn't it?
Certainly did.
Yeah, we got something and we thought, this is great. This is something that we can all get our teeth into. And you know, as usual, all the newspapers get hold of it first, and then they have their two penneth in there, and even Gary Lineker had his say on this one, and Rio Ferdinand, of course.
No, Rio's bound to have something to say, isn't he?
Yes. Obviously, well, yes.
Apart from the whole Clark Carlisle thing, he's got nothing to say about that.
No, that's a bit of an ugly incident, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, best not dwelling on that.
Yes, but of course it was Greg Dyke's speech, his address to the nation about the state of English football. And it was, he did make a point of saying it was all about English football, because of course he is the chairman of the FA. And it was
part-time.
Well, do you really need to be a full-time chairman of the FA? I mean, how much chairing do you have to do?
What does he do in his other part-time?
I don't know. He has probably. Well, he's getting old now, isn't he? I mean, the chances are he just wants to fill
his... He's not that old, is he?
Well, he looks quite old.
Maybe he's sort of like hooking up with Tony Blair to see what crazy scheme he's getting up to.
Maybe he is.
Maybe this was all part of his plan. But, okay, we're going to probably assume that you've read most of the speech, or heard of it at least, but we're gonna go over a few points of it, and we're going to basically tear it apart, aren't we? Or are we gonna support it, or are we going to say... meh, you know, he doesn't really tell us anything here.
I think it's always a good thing to address these issues. I think it's very cathartic. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, he's going to set up a commission and everything to find out how it happened and what can be done to turn it around, to get England winning the World Cup. And he set the targets as well. I think it is important to set targets. I've always been of the view that the FA's main target for the English national team is to qualify. I've always felt quite strongly that their main priority is to get to the tournament so that they can make lots and lots of money. And you know, if we happen to do well, then that's great. But I'm not entirely convinced that the FA deep down have ever been that bothered about us winning anything or putting on a really good show. They're more concerned about us just getting the coinage in.
I'd agree with that. But I would say as well that the whole speech struck me as basically him giving a description of what his job is. It did seem to me that it was just basically him blathering on for 2,500 words about, this is what I do in my job. There didn't seem to be anything too ground-shaking there. He was very careful not to tread on anyone's toes, especially the Premier League's.
Mm. Although I think he probably has succeeded in doing that.
I don't think that there's any way you can avoid that. As soon as you start mentioning foreign ownership, foreign managers, but then again, he was also at pains to say that the FA had employed two foreign managers to manage the England side. You are going to get people's backs up, and there are going to be... areas of the football community who are going to say that was directly aimed at us.
Yeah.
But I think as well, there are bits in there where he was too soft.
Yeah?
Well, I think there are places like and I'm going to say a club name now, but Manchester United, when he said in there that Manchester United have done great things for the England team, and about how they constantly produce players for the England team, when since 2000 they've hardly produced anyone for the England team. I think it's Cleverley and Welbeck in the current England setup, but before then you're looking at Wes Brown and Kieran Richardson.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about producing English players through their youth system, then you're absolutely right. Of course, there's plenty England players have played and do play for Manchester United, but they've come from elsewhere and other clubs youth
teams. Yeah, but it struck me as something. So, well, actually, that's not quite right there, Greg. And so it did sort of, for me, take away a lot of the rest of the argument, is to say, are you just saying things that the press are going to be happy to hear? What did you think about that? Do you think that he was saying things to placate people? Or?
Well, I think that he's had to draw walk along a fairly fine line, because in order for England to become successful and for them to even come close to meeting the targets that he's now set, he will need the Premier League's cooperation, because that is our domestic first division, and that is where we're going to get the players in order to win these trophies. So he has to be quite diplomatic while at the same time trying to be very clear about where he feels things have gone wrong. And I think that it's naive to suggest that the Premier League doesn't have some blame to be apportioned to it because of England's failings, because, as I said, it's our top division, and that's where the players come from. And if those players aren't good enough, then the Premier League has to have some impact on that, if not responsibility, then certainly some impact. It's not all of the reason.
Yeah.
But I certainly think that it is probably a significant part of the reason.
Mm. What's your opinion on that?
I tell you what, I think there's one place where that speech will have gone down really, really well, and that's with Roy Hodgson, because pressure's off him now. You don't have to win anything for the next 10 years. In fact, he even said, Dyke even said, that he didn't expect us to go and win in Brazil next year anyway.
Yeah, he made a point of saying that he imagined that Roy Hodgson would have a different view to what Greg Dyke has said, but you're right in that respect.
Well, yeah. Pressure's off, great. And in fact, any England manager that comes in, in the future, if it's well before 2022, pressure's off. If he's still at the helm, so it's like it's suddenly come from being the job that no one wants to.
Do you think though the FA has put pressure on managers, or do you think it's been the media that has put pressure on managers more than anything else? Because that's not going to go anywhere, is it?
I was being facetious, really.
But it's true though.
Yeah, it's true. No, in answer to your question, I think it's definitely the press, and you're right, that won't go away. But yeah.
This target as well is going to be an absolute millstone as well by the time we get to it, because everyone will look back and say, ha ha, do we all remember when Greg Dyke said this?
Yeah. 10 years ago today.
But the thing is though, you do have to set targets in life. And particularly in competitive industries like football. I mean, it's kind of astonishing that you don't already have targets.
Maybe that's what's so surprising about it, is that it's the first time anyone's ever said it.
Yeah, that I know of. I mean, I've heard some say that, David Bernstein said the same thing when he took over. I said, I remember Bernstein's address being, well, I don't remember him making an address. And I certainly don't remember them setting definable targets that you can be measured upon.
Mm.
I've always got the impression, as I said earlier, that the FA don't, sort of measure their targets in that way. And maybe it is time that somebody did come in and say, look, I guess the question is, do you think that these targets are achievable? And two, do you think that Greg Dyke thinks these targets are achievable, and he's just saying that just to focus minds?
I think it's good to focus minds, if that's what his intention is. But the targets are, it's achievable, but a lot of things have to change, and there has to be, there needs to be more focus on, bringing through the youth players. He said himself that the return on their investment in the academies and things like that set up hasn't really come to anything. So there needs to be a lot more focus on that. And, you know, there's the obvious one. I think we need more English players playing every week.
Yeah. I think it comes down to things like, you know, of course England can win it in 2022. We can win it next year.
We could.
We probably won't.
No.
But we could win it in the same way that Italy won it a few years ago.
Or Greece won Euro 2000.
Or Greece. Greece is always a very good example. Or Denmark even.
Yes.
When they won the European title there as well.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Because these things happen. Of course, those were when
far fewer
Denmark,
games back
Denmark
then.
Won it in a much, much smaller tournament.
Yeah.
But these things can happen. I think when you start putting targets up, you're saying we're going to have an England squad that will rival what Spain have got now. That where you've got pretty much not an almost guaranteed, but a very, very, very good chance of winning. We don't have a very good chance.
I think what he's saying is we want to have an England team that is capable of winning these tournaments by this time, which is not the same thing of actually winning them.
No.
But I think that he probably just felt that it's probably better to say to have a target of winning it just simply because it's just easier for people to digest.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
But in 1990, we had a team that was capable of winning the World Cup. In 1996, we had a team that was capable of winning the European Championship.
Yes.
But we didn't. We didn't win either. We got to semi-finals, and they were good tournaments.
Mm.
And the benefit that they gave to the sport was immeasurable. There wouldn't be a Premier League for Italia 90. And I think that was one of the things that really, really should have been hit home, I think, in that speech.
He did
mention it.
He pointed out, he quoted an email that he received from Martin Tyler, where Martin Tyler rightly points out that, when England win, then everybody wins, whether or not you're a supporter of Manchester City or Maidstone, or I forget which teams that he said. But I think that that's worth bringing home as well, that the England side, when England are successful, the Premier League wins. Because we've said this before on this podcast, but international football, the World Cup and the European Championship opened the doors of football to all the people who don't usually watch football.
Mm.
That's why club football hates international football so much, is because they resent this huge amount of money that it generates and interest that it generates for 4 to 6 weeks every summer. And if your national team does well, inevitably it picks up new fans, people who hadn't previously gone to their football team and now do, or people who hadn't previously subscribed to a satellite broadcaster but now do, because they're enthused by football because of what England,
or their kids are enthused by football, and hence now they are.
I'd think that this is something that the Premier League, I don't know whether they've deliberately done it or whether or not it's just not occurred to them, but I agree with you completely, Graham, that the Premier League in its current form would not have been formed were it not for Italia 90. If you hadn't been that initial... I mean, football was in the shit house in 1990 prior to the World Cup. I mean, only what, a year after Hillsborough and still reputationally, you know, suffering, and as it turns out, a government that didn't give two hoots about football or football fans, and we've discovered this to almost unbelievable extent in the last couple of years. And along came Paul Gascoigne and the rest, and gave us this adventure for 1 month, and suddenly loads of people getting back into football, and suddenly football is now becoming respectable, and then the Premier League is formed off the back of that. If England is successful, English football and their clubs benefit hugely from that. And I don't understand sometimes why Premier League clubs are quite so reticent and so antagonistic towards the national team. And you don't, I'm sure you see it to a lesser or greater extent in most clubs in leagues in Europe, but for me it seems in England to be, you know, particularly antagonistic. There isn't really any genuine willingness to even
there is a current though between fans, media and the clubs themselves, the international football is an annoyance. It's fine in the summer, but during the season it's just an annoyance.
Yeah, well that's because it is an annoyance. I don't think it's hypocritical to say that.
No.
Because it is an annoyance, but unfortunately it's a necessary annoyance.
Yeah.
Because we've got to have these qualifying tournaments in order to get there in the first place, and we can't play them any other time unless we play them in that spare summer, which just sounds like a stupid idea, but that's one possibility. Yeah. But you can't, you know, you just have to put up with that. I mean, I'm pretty certain that our qualification would be much less painful if we just acknowledged that they were necessary and just found a way of getting around them and just dealing with it. And I'm sure we'd all end up enjoying them a lot more.
Yeah.
How are the players rewarded for playing for England other than getting
a giant book deals? Lucrative advertising contracts for Head and Shoulders when they have to spill earbuds everywhere all over their bathroom.
Okay, so.
No, it's a very good point, though. They do get rewarded. Not all players take it, well, they didn't used to, but players do get huge rewards from playing.
They can do, yeah. If you're a England regular, you make stacks and stacks of money out of it. You can do.
Yeah. Well, from
third parties.
From profile.
Not directly from the Football Association, no.
Okay. It just makes me think, because they've got a huge amount of income coming from their clubs, and is there something, they can't see a direct revenue there, and they just kind of go, well, I might as well just stay. It's more important to play for these guys than those guys.
One of the things that this commission could possibly do would be to try and establish a link between the success of the national team and money in the bank for Premier League clubs. Hmm. If they could actually establish that link, then the Premier League clubs would go, ooh, all right, hang on, this is interesting. And then that may be a good way of getting Premier League clubs to be more supportive of the England team. But we've still got to go through the whole process of producing players who are actually good enough to be. And I have to say that although I can understand the very emotional arguments about there aren't enough English players and perhaps there should be a quota system, I watched the parts of the under-21 tournament last summer with the English parts, and they were awful. And you know, I wouldn't necessarily, as a supporter of a Premier League club, which I'm sure listeners are now aware that I am, I'm not sure how many of those players I'd be happy with in my side. Mm. So it's not just as straightforward as the players are there; they're just not getting the chances. I'm not entirely convinced they're actually good enough to begin with.
Yeah, I think there is a point, because you look at the he does come out with percentage points about how under 21 players are playing in top flights in leagues in Germany and Italy, and it's a lot more.
Well, those players are good, though.
And those players are good. Also, as well, is, you know, if these players were good enough, why aren't they playing for teams outside of England?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. Yeah. I mean, we've had this conversation a few times, and I've heard it expressed on other forums as well, is that one of the problems is that because the money's so good in England for English players, there's very little incentive for them to chance their arm and laugh off to Europe. Hmm. You know, maybe go and play in Belgium or Holland for a couple of years. If they go through the Premier League mill, they don't end up getting not a contract as such, but they don't get first team football. Rather than them thinking, maybe I'll just take a step down into the Championship, which is what a lot of them end up doing. So they end up, pissing around at, I won't name any clubs because I don't want to be like that. But, then rather than doing that, they could just, go and play for a Dutch club or maybe a French club, even if it's mid-table. I mean, it's a different scenario, but they're closer to the Champions League that way. And, as long as it could be demonstrated by the FA and by whoever the England manager is that they will be noticed and that, the England manager will go and or send people out there to watch them play, then I don't see any reason why they can't do that, apart from the fact that the money isn't as good over there as it is over here.
Exactly, and they're advised by, commercial organisations. These agents are in it to make their own money.
And also, the young
men who have got, at the most, 10 years, at the most, at the top of their game, 10 years. And that's a very, very short window to earn your cash. Yeah. Who can blame them?
But also, as well, is if you're a young English player and you're playing for, I don't know, so you say a Dutch side, let's say you're playing for PSV and you're getting in the team every week, you're 21 years old, but are you going to be getting in the England side?
Well, I mean, at the moment, I would say no. But I say, I think that there would have to be an understanding that would have to change.
Yeah.
They would have to encourage youngsters to say, okay, well, look, the Premier League is fiercely competitive and it attracts players from all over the world. And so, yeah, you know, any player, not just because you happen to be native of this country, but any player is going to struggle to meet the high standards.
Yeah.
And if you don't make the grade, it doesn't mean that you're washed up. It doesn't mean you should move to the Championship, but you should just try and move
that was,
sideways.
That was another point that he was alluded to there as well, was that the problem is growing in the Championship as well. But I don't know if it's any worse there than it would be in any top league in Europe.
This is a crazy... Perhaps it's a crazy notion, and it isn't particularly well thought through. So I hope you'll indulge me. But there's part of me that does wonder if there's just some benefit in just letting the Premier League just drift off
and become the big
uber global league that it clearly wants to be,
yeah,
and focus all our energies on youth development and player development in the Championship, where the Championship is, the last time I checked, the sixth or possibly fifth richest league in Europe. It's one of the best supported leagues.
It's the fourth best supported league in, according to Greg Dyke's speech, in Europe.
In Europe, and wow. So you can't help but wonder whether or not that's where our opportunities to develop and hothouse our best players might be.
Yeah.
And if they go up to the Premier League, then that's fine. But if they don't go up to the Premier League, then do it that way. Now, that slightly contradicts what I was saying earlier about them moving on. But if you strategise and look at the Champions League as a whole, Championship as a whole, and go, right, this is our development league for the English national team. And then we're going to, all of our stuff is going to be there. Because the Championship clubs presumably will be more inclined to accept that, especially if there's possible financial assistance and subsidies involved in doing this. Rather than the kind of haphazard approach that might come from just chancing their arm in the Premier League or farming them out to leagues overseas. Okay. I mean, you mentioned PSV.
Yeah.
An England under 21 international player wouldn't get into that PSV side.
Not in my opinion. Yeah.
So, you know, where else is them?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's players in the German second division that I think would probably, you know, would be perfectly comfortable playing in the Premier League, you know, but it is difficult out there. So perhaps there's some wisdom in hothousing the Championship and just letting the Premier League just get on with it.
Okay, well, so let's turn this into another direction and say what responsibility do the FA actually have for player development? What should they have?
Well, they've got total responsibility, haven't they?
Well, yeah, I mean,
clubs have got responsibility for the development of the players, but the FA have responsibility for a successful England team.
Yeah, and well, it depends on
however that works.
But it's an interesting concept because they're not they can develop players through the different age rankings of England's squads, but are they responsible for developing players that will just be snapped up by Premier League clubs for, you know, next to nothing? I mean,
and then left to rot on the bench.
Yeah.
Which is
and then kicked out when they're 17, 18 and left to fight for.
Yeah. Exactly. You know. I mean, I think what's interesting about this whole subject is that, you know, whether you agree with him or not, he certainly, you know, brought into focus the discussion. When I was looking into this before
I haven't got my notes, he's got some notes, listeners.
But the press response.
Why have you got David Kelly written on your notes?
Because I was doing some back. Just shut up! I was making a very important point there. What was I saying? Yes, the point is that it's been discussed now, and that's a really good thing. You know, there needs to be some kind of strategy in place to make this happen, and if it means that, you know, the Premier League has to compromise on some of its power, some of its money, or whatever. I think when you said that the Premier League wins when England wins, or if it can prove a link between the two. I mean, if you look at what happened to the economy after the Olympic Games. I mean, it was a huge lift. Imagine if England won the World Cup; it would be, you know, it would be comparable to that. So that would be a big win for everyone.
Mm.
So
it did also occur to me as well that one target that maybe he should have set, but maybe this is completely unrealistic, would be for England to host an upcoming European Championship.
Because
I think that also helps an awful
also has to be to
pressure's on then for the
to be remembered that when the Premier League first started, it wasn't great. It wasn't, you know, people like Brian Roy could come over and be a superstar. But after Euro 96, it all changed, and that's when it really ramped up. Another example of the way how a good England campaign can change everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it does make sense, but it does seem baffling. But if the FA can establish a causal link between money in the bank for international football and money in the bank for Premier League football, then things might get a little bit easier.
Okay, so let's talk about quick fixes then.
I like a good quick fix.
Yeah. What's your quick fix, Jan? What's your quick fix for football?
Quick fix, I suspect it's not going to go down too well. Maybe not in this room, but I think there should be a certain number of English players in a team.
Okay, a bit of racism there. Good.
I think it's more xenophobia than racism.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go for that side.
But do you know what?
It's a quick fix.
But do you know what, though? In terms of quick fixes, I'm going to agree with Jan.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the point is that generally speaking, quick fixes are usually don't work. That's the whole point of quick fixes, isn't it? I'm not convinced that that's the right way of doing it. But if you want to do something now, then you can do that now.
Yeah.
I mean, the Turkish League have done it, and they've done it now. And it's much to the chagrin of some of the bigger clubs there who are gearing themselves up for Champions League football, and now they're realising they're having to turf out, you know, all these foreign players that they spent a lot of money on.
But they're not under EU law, are they?
No, and obviously we are.
Yeah.
You know, well, we are at the moment. Right. Obviously, that's all yet to be decided.
That's another quick fix.
There's a quick fix. I know what we should do. We should have a referendum on the England national team. I don't know what the hell we're going to ask, but let's have a referendum. Yeah. Come on, let's have your quick fix.
My quick fix would be to say central contracts for England players.
I wondered if you were going to bring that up. That central contract thing works in, I think, with my half-baked championship theory.
Yeah.
Because if you use that, then I think that Premier League won't go for central contracts because the chances are that the FA couldn't meet the
central money. Contracts for under 23s.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a nice idea. I certainly also think that the FA should set themselves up maybe as agents as well. As representation, so that they have a stake, if you like, in that player's license.
Yeah.
In the same way that you know, so the FA become like a kind of benevolent Keir Jurabjian.
Well, so
not that Keir Jurabjian is benevolent.
England actually become a club itself.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. And so they say, well, this is our player, and we represent him, and so we look after him. That's another. That's a, perhaps a more imaginative way of trying to, you know, see players through to the England national team.
Mm.
Not that quick, though.
No, not that quick. But quick in that you can make a decision and you can announce that tomorrow without having to do anything.
It's one of those like making policy on the fly things. It's something you can say, you can set up a commission for it and you can lose it in about 3 or 4 years. And it'd be like ID cards and things like that. And then people say, oh, it never worked. But the IT system they brought in cost like £80 billion.
They should get Keir Jurabjian, you know, as chief executive of the FA. I bet you he'd sort it out. One way or the other.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you just see all of England's talent being shipped around Russia in the camper van, like, you know, turning up to...
So, how proud are you to play for your country, England? Yes, I'm very proud. As a boy growing up in Buenos Aires, I dreamed of playing for England.
Scarolous, unpleasantness. Yes, we'll draw this week's discussion to a close. Well, it's not really drawing it to a close. It's opening it up for everyone else to talk about. What's your opinion then? Have we said anything tonight that's got you foaming at the mouth? Then get in touch, because you know we
don't. Or call a doctor if you're foaming at the mouth.
Yes, you might have rabies.
You might have rabies.
Yeah, that would never be nice. Anyway, next week we'll probably be like scratching around for a subject to discuss. So enjoy this while it lasts. Has it been? Well. It's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from these guys.
Goodbye. Don't forget Top Drums.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, at Sound of Football, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Yeah, 3 weeks in, still looking for your first win. How do you think it's been going so far?
Badly.
Yeah.
Pretty badly.
Do you feel the pressure's on you to win?
I don't think the pressure's on me. I just think it's all down to the players, and I think they've been disgusting and just, you know.
How do you feel about your treatment in the press? There's been a lot of things said. I mean, you know,
No, there hasn't.
No?
No.
No.
Do you think you'll win by 2022?
Well, I've set myself a target to have got at least one game under my belt before then.
Is there going to be a quick fix for this?
I could mug Terry.
Right.
So, if you weren't here last week, listeners, well, amazing scenes. Terry was trying to get his third win in a row, but the listeners, you, yes, you won. David Villa really pulled it out of the bag, and
sure,
so now you get to choose. We actually posted the card that you had on Twitter earlier, and the consensus was...
The consensus was goals. Andrew Gibney, thank you, Andrew, goals. George Ogier, thank you again, George, goals. Steve Gabb, he wanted caps. That's how contrary he is.
He's a contrarian.
Twitter handle, but he chose caps. Chris Oakley, I don't know who he is.
Who's he?
He's the other fella.
Oh,
I can't remember him.
Yeah. Follow him.
Yeah, I might follow him. Yeah, he says goals. And Wayne Bullen also says goals. I think you have a consensus.
We have a consensus here.
It's going to be goals.
Okay, well, I can read the card.
I think we should have picked
on
caps.
Behalf of the...
you think
of,
that, but
of,
it's what
the
listeners
listen.
Think. Yeah.
And the career goals is 286. This is Cristiano Ronaldo. I'll go first because I've got Sergio Ramos. You can guess that the career goals doesn't really match up to that. 45.
Daniel De Rossi, 42 goals. This is unbelievable. Played four, lost four. Stop laughing at
me. Sorry, I'm laughing with you.
Yes.
I was laughing at your card.
I'm in the same boat. And Terry? Come on.
Well, I've got Karim Benzema, which spices things up a little bit.
A little bit.
But not enough.
Not
141.
Enough.
So listeners,
you win again.
How many caps has Cristiano Ronaldo?
88.
Would he have won on caps?
He would have won all on caps.
He would have won on caps as well. So all right, Steve, we'll give you that.
Join us again next week for more Sound of Football Top Trumps.
This is a stupid game.
It's a brilliant game.
It's a brilliant game if you've won two of them.
Oh, come on.